Hello and welcome. Today I am joined by Andrew Lemon, who is Chief Revenue Officer from Strength by Numbers. Andrew, how are you doing?
Going well, Andy. It's evening time here over in Melbourne in Australia, so I've got my cup of tea. I'm sure you've got one, being, a good Englishman early in the morning or something like that. So yeah, no, going well and really excited for the chat, to be honest.
Brilliant. Great. Yeah, no, yeah, thank you for joining in the evening. What time is it there, actually?
Oh, we're ticking over into 8:17 p.m. So I've had my dinner. I'm really well energized.
Well, I spent maybe, I'd say the best, actually, no, my fiance won't like me saying that answer, so I won't say that, but certainly a great year in Australia and Melbourne in particular. I spent about 6 months there, so doing the Neighbours tour, going to the Australian Open, met Carl Kennedy, there was Toadfish, all of that stuff.
That sounds like, yeah, you bought the typical Englishman package from
Oh yeah.
your travel agent, that's for sure.
I'm a complete tourist and I actually love it still. So yeah, I have no problems with doing all the complete touristy stuff. But no, brilliant. What an amazing city Melbourne is. It's like that is probably you would say, I mean, Manchester's a really good sporting city, but Melbourne probably would say the best in the world.
We're very lucky. We have a lot of sporting events, that's for sure. And I think the Melbourne kind of city likes to remind its citizens all the time of how good it is as a sporting capital. And we tend to do pretty well in when they rank cities and stuff like that. But we did also have that unwanted record of, I think, the most locked down for a period of time not that long ago. As well. So, look, it's got its good points, but it had its bad ones kind of in recent times as well.
We won't dwell too much on COVID because that feels like a long time ago. But like, what? How long was it locked down for then?
I ran out of fingers and toes to count it. That's for sure. But at some stage, I think it felt like it was almost, at least 6 months plus, kind of thing. It was crazy, but it provided a lot of opportunities to adapt and learn, how to do things maybe a little bit differently, which we might touch on a bit later on.
Yeah, no, very good. No, great. So just a bit of intro and is how we know each other. So your Strength by Numbers are our latest partner that we're working with at Physiquip. So really excited about that. We've been great to work with. So we've been chatting for probably 18 months or so and really excited to get cracking with that now. So I'm keen to understand your backstory and how you got involved in this area. So in terms of you then, so are you from the Melbourne area originally?
Yeah, born and raised. Kind of went to school here, did my tertiary education here, and kind of ended up starting my businesses here. So yeah, bit of a homebody in that respect. But yeah, as we kind of said, it's probably a pretty good city to really base yourself out of.
And so when you were growing up then, like what did you have a plan of what you were looking to get into from a youngish age?
It's one of those ones. The way in which I describe it is not so much a plan of what I wanted to do, but I had a really good plan of what I didn't want to do, which was I didn't want to emulate my father, my old man, because my earliest memories of work and kind of what does work entail seem to be, watching my old man kind of fall asleep on the couch in his kind of study kind of late at night, and then go back to kind of rattling on the computer and kind of doing all that, being a bit of a corporate kind of individual that he was. So I just kind of knew that I didn't really want to do that, and that led me then, I guess, to maybe thinking about, what are the other possibilities if you're not going to work in an office or something along those lines. And it, seemed to be you become a firefighter or, a doctor or something like that. And so I probably gravitated more towards the health kind of aspects. I think like anyone that you speak to who's got a background in as a health professional, we all tend to be like failed athletes. in many ways. So, you know, it was kind of half decent at sport, but not good enough to go anywhere with it. And so I think that was probably the starting of it. And then after speaking to, you know, a bunch of people, probably settled on originally wanting to become a physiotherapist until someone pointed out this thing called osteopathy. And then I ended up kind of doing my studies in that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll come on to the osteopathy, but in terms of that, so athletes that you looked up to when you were growing up then, like what was your sport and which athletes was it that really inspired you?
Well, it's all Australian rules football here in Melbourne, Andy. So, you know, for those who aren't familiar with it, you know, it's kind of kicking the oval shaped ball through the big sticks and, you know, kind of handballs and marking, 360 degree game, no pads, you know, a lot of running, full on. So, but yeah, I mean, that's the religion here in Melbourne. So it was looking at those players. I'm a Hawthorne Hawks fan myself, you know, and so always used to be really interested, obviously, in what they were doing from a health and a fitness standpoint. And you know, there would always seem to be those individuals who would, you know, the dreaded hamstring injuries are obviously rife in AFL football as they are in kind of European football and things like that. And it was, you know, why do some people suffer from those injuries so badly and others don't? And they're all doing, you know, kind of the same thing. It was always like an interesting conundrum to kind of look at.
So, and then that did lead you into doing osteopathy then. So what was it about that particularly intrigued you?
I think, like, you know, for me personally, always being like someone who I've probably always marched to the beat of my own drum a little bit, in some way, and physio just seemed a bit too mainstream. Someone though pointed out to me this thing called osteopathy, an older friend who had a friend who just gone through the course or completed the course, and you know, kind of said that they really enjoyed it, and it probably just resonated a bit more with me at the time. You know, this concept of they certainly promoted a lot this idea, this more holistic philosophy of looking at health and well-being and managing injuries and things like that, which seemed to make probably a lot more sense to me. I think arguably now these days, you know, everyone, regardless of the profession, if you're kind of practicing in an evidence-based way, you probably are pretty holistic in the way in which you're going about it and looking, you know, kind of at all the different areas and how they integrate and work together. But at the time, that seemed to be a little bit more osteopathic, or, you know, kind of seemed to be the thing that that kind of course was promoting, or that education was promoting. And also the location of the course was really convenient. It was about, you know, 20 minutes on the train to get to the institution that was teaching it. So it worked out well in that respect as well, you know, which you always kind of factoring in when you're a poor student and can't, you know, afford to travel or drive or spend too much money on petrol and things like that.
Yeah, no, very much so. And then, so did you have a plan of what like job you wanted to go into once you'd become an osteopath then?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with it was I was always, I didn't want to get into the public system at all. Like, I had no interest in that. And the way it is here in Australia, you know, the vast majority of osteopaths would work in private clinics. So, you know, it fit that bill really well. I'd done like a little bit of, I guess, kind of career kind of observation or studies, you know, or shadowing some osteopaths in, you know, kind of my final years of school. So I was pretty aware of a bunch of clinics and how they kind of operated and things like that. So it was always going to be a case of going into private practice. Managed to kind of get, you know, a job very quickly after completing my studies. It's something that, you know, there's always plenty of work available. So yeah, that was a pretty easy transition as well.
And so throughout that whole process, like, were there any points where you thought, not sure I'm doing the right thing here? Or was there anything else that you thought maybe I should be doing something different? Or was it always that the osteopathy was actually really enjoying this and I can see a career and future in it?
Yeah, probably at the time, no, I don't think I really doubted it too much. The I think, you know, fortunately it was a fairly smooth process kind of through all of those kind of studies. It's a pretty long course though. I mean, here in Australia, the osteopathy course that I attended was a 5-year, you know, combined bachelor's and master's course. But the thing that really made it was, the beauty of it was quite a small, tight-knit course. So, you know, a lot of great friends that I still have. That was probably, you know, the thing that kind of kept me in it, you know, the most, I think, is just the friends and the relationships that you build kind of with those people, being around them, you know, all the time, all kind of, I guess, working towards a similar end kind of goal, you know, in terms of your qualification and things like that. But it was probably more, I mean, I think with that question, what I think I found though in like my first maybe 12 months, maybe slightly longer of actually being an osteopath, I think I underestimated probably actually what day-to-day life would be like in the role, which was a bit frightening at one stage because you've gone through 5 years of study. And then, you know, the reason why I say it was a bit frightening was I found in that first role that I had, you know, it was in a small-ish suburban clinic, probably had 3 or 4 treatment rooms, well-established though, had been around for a while. But here I was, you know, kind of basically I'd go to work, I'd go straight to my little room, you know, what probably wasn't even 3 by 3 meters inside, you know, no real natural light or anything like that. And then, yeah, you're just on the rotation of clients going in, clients going out, you know, on the table, off the table, doing your treatment, kind of giving your advice, kind of doing all your things. And yeah, the thought of doing that for the next 30, 40 years was pretty scary, to be honest. You know, gave me a bit of a shake up. So I knew very quickly, I think, into working in that kind of environment, that I wasn't going to last very long if that was what we were doing kind of day in, day out, every year, that's for sure.
And so what were you thinking about at that time then that would be to be able to break that up or have a change?
Well, it led me to kind of think, okay, well, what do I need to do? I guess, you know, when I initially got into approaching osteo and osteopathy, it was because I had an interest in health and well-being and fitness and things like that. And so I learned a bunch of skills in assessment and diagnosis and all of those type of things, and some, you know, kind of hands-on treatment skills that probably osteopaths use more than a lot of other kind of professions and things like that. And we had learned a bit of exercise prescription, and I'd always been someone who trained and exercised a lot. And so I think the realization was that the working in the 3x3 treatment room was not the answer. And for the vast majority of probably the patients and clients, it wasn't the long-term answer either. You know, I mean, there's a lot of the work that I think that can be done that is very positive in that environment is helping people feel better, reduce sensitivity, reduce discomfort and things like that. So that you can then take them to whatever that next level might be, which is usually involving some type of active involvement from the patient, from the client in their health and wellness journey. So I knew I just had to focus more on that side and create or find myself in an environment in which I could start to facilitate that. So I ended up actually doing a little bit of study over in the US with some other kind of educational organizations, more looking at like movement and kind of the, you know, exercise-based approaches to therapy and things like that. And so that's where I thought I would kind of find a lot of the answer. And I think as well, then what I found myself was then getting very restless in that kind of environment that I was in. So ended up briefly kind of working in maybe a couple other little clinics that had a bit more space and a bit more facility to be able to kind of approach things from an exercise standpoint, but then actually ended up starting my my first little business, which was a little solo studio, you know, kind of in a couple of suburbs away from where I started, and kind of pursuing a bit of that initially, and also initially having a bit of a focus on golf of all things. You know, it's kind of the location was in and amongst some of the best golf courses here in Australia, probably in the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm. Yeah. So then did that give you the fact you were doing your own thing? Was like, had business been something on your agenda that you wanted to do for a while?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the sense that, once again, you know, kind of always being someone who probably marched, you know, as I said, to the beat of my own drum, it's not that I had problems with like authority or anything like that, but I just always had very strong opinions on the way in which I thought things should be done. And I've got no doubt that I was a massive headache for some of my previous bosses, who I apologize, you know, now in advance when you kind of get a bit of perspective in maybe how you were as an employee.
In what way is that though? Because I think you can look at stuff depending on what it was, obviously. Sometimes it's like, if you've got ideas, that's what I would want, say, in my business. If you've got someone who's got a strong opinion on something and they've got evidence to say why it's effective, brilliant.
Yeah, look, I think you're right in that respect. I guess it just really depends on the you know, on the environment and whether or not that can be nurtured effectively, as opposed to just having someone who is always kind of punching upward and kind of being shut down a bit. So it was probably a little bit of give and take. You know, there was a scenario in my career where the original kind of workplace that I worked in, there was a change of ownership. And of course, you know, when you're kind of used to a certain kind of standpoint, and maybe I think some of the financial reimbursement maybe kind of changed not in my favor in that point of time. And so I think at that point I was, you know, looking at kind of trying to do some other things anyway. So I was probably a bit checked out as an employee anyhow. So more like environments like that. But I agree exactly with what you're saying. I think, you know, you want to have robust discussion. You want to have people bringing innovation and ideas to the table, because at the end of the day, like, that is the most important thing to set yourself apart from your competitors and other businesses and things like that too.
Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah, after you'd done that, then like what was the transition from there?
So I mean, where I very quickly kind of fell into, and I think this was also kind of driven by having this you know, a bit of a focus on golf and things like that, is I found very quickly, you know, I was doing all of these things, but it was the limitation that I always had was, how do I show the effectiveness of what I'm doing beyond the how do you feel part, right? So beyond the patient that comes in who has a painful body part, and, you know, you've reduced it from a 6 out of 10 pain to a 4 out of 10. Like, it's just a really hard thing to kind of conceptualize, not just even for you or to show, you know, it's hard for even the patient or the client to really tangibly understand that. And then as well, from the golf perspective, you know, I mean, golf being such a sport of numbers, you know, one of the things that I kind of found all the time is that the golfers really loved the experiences when they could see, you know, numbers change, whether that be handicap goes down, you know, driver distance goes up, club head speed goes up. Like, that was the thing that was always the indicator of a great experience, you know, for those kind of individuals. So it just led me to really think deeply about, okay, well, like, what is the how do we objectively assess and measure that improvement? And so it kind of led down a lot of different paths, you know, kind of had some involvement with some other products and some other businesses where we developed some other assessment tools, things that were pretty simple and easy to use, and, you know, developed some kind of teaching material around that, because we found that we weren't the only ones who were thinking that way. And so, you know, that kind of just suggested early on that that was something that was happening, or it was, you know, coming along. Objective assessment was something that other people were interested in. Ended up expanding, you know, the clinic, growing that into a bigger operation where, once again, we then had a focus on the objective assessment, particularly as that tool that really bridged the gap between initial consultations, once again, all the work that tends to happen in the treatment room, helping people feel better, reduce their sensitivity, but then how do we engage them into the exercise part, things like that. And then, you know, the final culmination of that was then, okay, well, actually, how do we turn this into, or how do we create, you know, technological solutions for this, particularly after all of that experience, which was probably over about, I'm going to say, like 4 or 5 years, maybe, you know, just really delving quite deeply across a range of different areas of objective assessment and the needs for everyday health and fitness professionals, you know, across a range of different professions. You know, that's where kind of Strength by Numbers kind of was born out of, I guess.
Yeah. And then who was, you mentioned the we there, like who was that we that was working on this?
So it was kind of, it was with another business partner who no longer kind of involved with anymore, but yeah, there was a partnership there where we were kind of working together on some of this stuff, but also then, you know, developing that with some of the other kind of founders of Strength by Numbers as well.
And how do you know these people? How does that come together?
It's one of those funny stories, actually. Like, so the real initiation of it was obviously, you know, we had this set up where we were kind of looking at objective assessment. We were already doing a lot in that space. And then two of the brothers who are part of the Strength by Numbers team, Jordan and Lachlan, they'd been tinkering away in their garage, kind of, you know, building little kind of widgets and things like that. And actually came, you know, looking for, I guess, some feedback or some advice on, what do you think of this? You know, would this be useful in terms of working with patients and clients? And that really sparked a conversation, you know, that they had been kind of developing some tools. We developed some good ideas in terms of objective assessment and how it should be applied. And so it was really a real moment where we could go, okay, you know, together there's something here, particularly because using dynamometry and force plate technology and things like that, we, you know, that was already something that was part of our clinic, and it just wasn't really designed for the, we always talk about it at Strength by Numbers, the everyday health and fitness professional. Clunky, archaic stuff that probably hadn't changed in 10 to 20 years, you know, mostly designed for research and science experiments and stuff like that. With the way technology has developed, particularly over the last, you know, 5-10 years, it's like user experiences are really important, and how do we make technology simple and easy to use? No one was doing that yet, so we really felt there was a gap or a big problem that need to be solved in that sense.
And so when was this? How many years ago was that?
You're testing my memory now, Andy.
I had a quick look earlier on.
I mean, we launched mid-2019, which is a fantastic time to launch a business. But I reckon we started doing some of this stuff. It was probably around like 2017, I'm going to say. It was probably 2 to 3 years worth of development that went into the products before we were ready to launch. First of all, a lot of blood, sweat and tears, I can tell you that much as well.
Yeah, I can definitely empathize with that. And so when you were coming together, you'd met Jordan and Lachlan and you saw that you had something. Like, what did you see as being the vision for where you could go with this?
Well, I mean, there's so many things, right? Like, number one, strength testing, force measurement, all of those kind of elements were things that were just typically hard to do in a everyday clinical setting. Fine if you work at, the university biomechanics lab, or fine if you're, working probably down the road from you at Manchester United or Manchester City or, wherever it might be. But if you're in a everyday suburban clinic, even just having access to, at the time, like we were doing strength testing with like commercial grade gym equipment, huge, big, heavy bits of kit, certainly nothing that was portable that you could move around in a clinical setting or take down to your local sports club or gym or whatever to promote your services or test people out on the road. Number one was just the facilitation of just, let's just make this stuff easy and accessible for everyone to use. Because, there's no reason why if something's good enough for one of the players down at Manchester United or Manchester City, why isn't it good enough for, the local kind of soccer star or even just the weekend warrior who likes to hack about and, have a Sunday league kick or whatever it might be. The principles and the ideals around how we manage people at the elite end equally apply at the grassroots end. So there was that, first of all, I think, just making this stuff accessible, affordable, easy to use. You start to realize actually the power of all this stuff as well. So, for example, the amount of time that I've spent, trawling through research studies and things like that to be able to try and understand results and, what people should get or what they should do. Once you start actually having integrated technological solutions, you can, start to democratize data and, the possibilities of having huge data sets of testing and having access to that, become really, that they're not things that are far-fetched when modern technology is involved. So ideas around that and I think there are even greater kind of visions at play as well now that we've seen the development of kind of AI and, kind of machine learning type tools and things like that come into play. So it's just about taking these things and I guess bringing them into the 21st century, but also making them just really accessible to everyone in the community. Because I think, what I probably quickly realized is I have far greater impact in the world from a health and fitness standpoint by helping other people help people than me just being locked away in the treatment room, kind of seeing, 15, 20 patients a day, that type of thing as well.
Yeah, no, I think that is interesting. And it's like when you're trying to define your mission, it needs to be genuine. It needs to really align with what you're doing. And it's the same thing for me as, whereas some people in my team, I know, will say we're here to help the clinician. Whereas really for me, it's like, I want to help people, help businesses who are then doing that work. That's where I feel like that I can add most value, and really PhysiQuip can do the same. And that's like with working with people like you. I mean, I find it really interesting. I've been in the area for, say, 16 or so years, probably more than that, actually. And I was working with Biodex, with BTE, so like big dynamometers. Like you were saying, it was used a lot in research, used a lot in the NHS. That was historically where 70 to 80% of our business was we'd sell to those people. We'd sell to sports teams. So, but now it is completely different, like, and even more so in the last 4 years. And I don't think just to do with COVID, but that the NHS is on its knees over here in the UK. And so the transition from these clinics who would historically just, wouldn't really do this sort of work. Now there's massive opportunities, and you see the explosion of clinics that are investing in more technology. The expectations are way higher of the patient. So I do think it's very interesting, because there's a Biodex or a BTE, 100 odd grand, whatever it is for those things, massive unit. And then you've got these other things which are maybe used in private practice with, say, handheld dynamometry like Active Force or things like that, which are really useful tools. But that transition is going from, well, either no tech through to these really big things, which are really useful, but have you got the budget? Have you got the space? And is that the best use of resource within your clinic? I think trying to understand that dynamic is, and that's where products like Strength by Numbers and, you know, other ones that are on the market are really cool, because actually this is some data that is relatable to the patients.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that are driving it. Number one, I think, is probably from the clients or the patients themselves. I mean, I think your average client, your average patient is just so much better educated on health and wellness metrics these days than, as you say, they were 5 years ago. You know, everyone's got an Apple Watch. Everyone's got a Garmin, everyone's got a host of different apps that they're using to track their sleep, track their nutrition, you know, track everything. And they're all things that are giving them scores, and they're engaging with themselves and having that awareness through technology. So to rock up to a physiotherapist, an osteopath, personal trainer, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, if you're not using technology, it must be a pretty, I'm not going to say disappointing experience, but, like, you know, it's not an aligned experience. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm someone who's always kind of tracking my activity and tracking my health and getting kind of scores with this, to come and have someone just essentially assess me through look and feel, you know, it just must seem so at odds. I say that because I think I'm actually probably I'm so biased in the sense that, not just because obviously I'm a big part of this company and things like that, but also, like, from a practitioner standpoint, there was a time where I became so reliant on the tools in how I did my job, I just couldn't fathom how I actually did things before, because they're just so useful. They give you so much insight and things like that. So I think a lot of it is being driven by the customer in many respects, but also, like, we're seeing on the opposite end as well. For example, in New Zealand, literally this month, they're starting to implement mandates with their healthcare system in which, for certain conditions, tools like the Strength by Numbers AXIT tools have to be used as part of it. So dynamometry tools and things like that, because we know from a results-based standpoint that measuring outcomes is how we drive the results. Set the baselines, understand whether or not the interventions are having a positive effect or not, show the progression. You know, it works from a good outcome standpoint. It engages clients into it. They're motivated by their scores and how they're, you know, tracking, whether or not they got a 30 or 40% improvement in the last 6 weeks or something like that, is really kind of motivating and driving in that. And then the final piece really is, you know, okay, if we've got from the bottom up, and potentially from the top down. We just need to make it accessible, and you know, and it just needs to be affordable. And you know, as I think technology has advanced, what tends to happen is that it does become more affordable. And certainly, you know, we like to think that AXIT is really well placed in that kind of position, as you know, it's a better tool, obviously, than some of the real cheaper initial kind of options that you might kind of go with. But it comes as well with like a lot of smarts as well. You know, it does a lot of processing of the data for you, generating of the reports for you. You know, there are kind of ways in which it can kind of interact and integrate with some of the other admin tools that you use and things like that. So, you know, hopefully it's accessible, it's affordable, but it's also saving you a lot of time. Because that's the other kind of key part too, right? Like if it's a if it's something that just adds more time to your consultations or makes your job harder, then you know it might not necessarily be an appropriate fit. But you know, AXIT fortunately does the opposite of that, saves time.
Yeah, no, definitely the feedback we've had as well. And then what is it about Australia that all these tech, these objective strength measuring tools are coming out, whether it's Vold or KangaTech,
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, because what it means for us is like, you know, we're right in the we're in the thick of it, you know. It's like it's bloody competitive over here in Australia. Look, I think there's partly, you know, obviously being a probably a country that bats above its average in from a sporting sense. You know, there's always a lot of sport focus and probably a lot of sport innovation initially. And that's where probably a lot of these tools have come from, you know, high performance sport. How do we innovate and kind of do more from that standpoint? There's a lot of like a lot of great researchers here in Australia, you know, doing some fantastic work. And there are things that kind of spin out of that, I guess, from that perspective. But, you know, once again, it kind of is, that's also then the driving reason as to like why we exist as well, because some great products have come out of the high performance sport environment. But just because they're appropriate for high performance sport doesn't mean they're the best choice as an everyday health and fitness professional. And so there are needs for those professionals that, you know, I guess is where we've kind of tried to put a bit of a spin on it and really kind of niche down and focus in that respect. It's either that or there's something in the cold beer that we've got over here, mate. Maybe it, you know, just makes people a bit more innovative.
Yeah, possibly that. Yeah, I think it is really interesting that it's coming out now, and it really is exploding, and certainly over in the UK it is exciting to see the opportunities. And that does get me excited when you can see that clinics do seem to have their minds open, and also can understand it. Like when you're investing in stuff, you've got to understand the return on it as well, because it's, well, we run businesses and it's stressful. Like you've got to make sure you've got enough money to be able to be moving forward and that you're making a profit. And in terms of like for you then, so what do you do like for your own professional and personal development? Now you've, you know, you're running a business. Like how do you, are you interested in like podcasts or with like your own development of understanding business?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, certainly, yeah, spend a lot of time, you know, consuming books on Audible or reading books. You know, I've set myself the goal of at least one a month on both of those, you know, one read, one listened to per month this year, which I think I'm just behind. Like I'll tick off my, you know, my two for February, you know, probably in the next day or so. So I try to keep involved in that respect from a business standpoint. Try to network a bit as well, you know, particularly as you said, over here, the sports tech, health tech space is pretty active. And there's lots of great founders, really interesting people, who are really open to chat as well, you know, introduce themselves. I'm having a chat with a local founder from Adelaide on Friday, for example, you know, just catching up. And I just reached out to them because I saw they released a new product recently that looks pretty cool, and just wanted to say hi. So, you know, I always think like that's probably something that I've kind of learned, like, you know, kind of feeling maybe initially like everyone's your competitor and therefore your enemy is actually not the case. It's actually like, you know, we're all just having a go in business and things like that. And so particularly, you know, for maybe not directly competing products, you know, it's probably a bit easier to reach out to people. But you meet your competitors and in, you know, some of those companies that you mentioned just before at conferences and, you know, as exhibitors at conferences and things like that. It's always fine just to say hi and just have a quick chat. You know, those type of things. So I do a bit of that as well, but also trying to keep my kind of, I guess my mind sharp when it comes to being still a health professional as well. So, you know, last year and even at the start of this year, I've attended just a few conferences as well, you know, just to kind of listen to people talk about what they're doing from a, you know, as health and fitness professionals and how they're managing clients and what's new research and things like that. Because at the end of the day, you know, we've still got to keep our finger on the pulse from that perspective as well. Like what are the needs and what are the workflows of those practitioners that we service?
Yeah. What's your favorite business book?
I'd tell you a good one that no one seems to know. And I'm going to forget the author off the top of my head, but it's called Founding Sales. Really great book from a, I would say like a very tactical standpoint for anyone who's looking or has started a very early stage business. Really great book. It's quite extensive, quite big, but you know, I mean, you tend to find everyone talks a lot about, I don't know, the same things when you're kind of like an entrepreneur or just starting a business. And it's probably all a bit vague until you get enough momentum going. This is probably like a book that kind of features, you know, probably pretty early in that journey, and actually gives some really great just tactical tips and strategies, like, you know, in terms of how to handle that early stage. And then, of course, like, you know, Good to Great by Jim Collins. That's another good one that I recently kind of read again. So, you know, there are probably a couple that come to mind.
Yeah, good. I'll check that one out. Founding Sales. I've not heard of that one. I've got way too many books on the go, but they're quite exciting if you get ones. I've just been listening to a lot of stuff around Daniel Priestley, who's an Aussie entrepreneur. Yep. Don't know if you know him, but I love his stuff.
Yeah, the name certainly rings a bell.
Yeah. And then just to touch on the point that you mentioned before about, yeah, there's, in theory, you're competing over money to some extent when you've got these other, say, med tech or other companies out there. But from my mind, is really we're growing the space. Like, it's such an exciting time. And certainly in private healthcare, the opportunities are great. And all of the companies, whatever they are, even if they're competing products, we're all raising awareness of things which genuinely drive the industry forward, help people, help professionals, and help clinicians develop themselves and become, you know, broader, whether it's to do with understanding biomechanics or whatever it is. It's like it's given a lot of opportunities for not being stuck in a 3x3 meter room and actually going a number of different paths. So I do think it's a really exciting area, and we should be embracing everything, really. So no, it's exciting. So yeah, just to finish on for you then. So what do you see as the plans for Strength by Numbers and you moving forward?
Well, apart from world domination, look, just continuing to expand on that, I guess that concept, you know, I mean, the thing that drives us is this idea of helping everyday health and fitness professionals get better outcomes with the people they work with, servicing their communities, but also making their jobs easier. Because I think those two things go hand in hand. Like, you know, there's always room for us to provide better services to people, to, you know, improve the quality of their lives and drive amazing outcomes from that. But it's hard being a health and fitness professional. Like, it's time consuming and it's hard. And so what we really want to do is we really want to help make that easier to do. And so there's lots of ways in which we're going to continue to do that and continue to develop our products to be able to do that. But, you know, that's the thing that really gets me up firing out of bed in the morning, that's for sure.
Brilliant. No, that's really good. And actually, no, I'll ask another question on this as well. So how is it running a business and like working with business partners? Like what's the dynamic of that, especially when you're working with brothers as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fun to kind of, you know, because obviously having two business partners that are brothers, there's, you know, there's that dynamic there where they can really have some very robust conversations, which can be pretty fun to just be, you know, on the outside of and have a chuckle at. But look, I mean, having had good business partners and bad business partners in my short time in business, you know, so far, I think, you know, the key is obviously pick the right people. Because it is, it's like, you know, we briefly mentioned it off air, but it's, you know, it is like being in a relationship, a romantic relationship. So, you know, doesn't come with some of the perks in that respect. But you should pick people in a similar way, you know, people who have similar qualities, you know, things that you admire about them, things that, you know, you guys share in common or things like that. You know, make sure you pick your business partners probably based on that first and foremost. And then, you know, the other things you can work out as you go, you know, like what are your strengths and weaknesses and, you know, leveraging your strengths whilst, you know, kind of minimizing your weaknesses maybe in other ways and things like that. Like you can work all of that stuff out later on. But if you're not aligned in terms of your values and, you know, the things that you share in common in that respect, it's just like that stuff you just can't change. So, it's not going to set itself up for success if you don't pick that. So very fortunate that, you know, the team at Strength by Numbers, we're all kind of on the same page, and it's a real joy to work with all of them as well.
Yeah, no, well, just to echo that as well, I think that it's the same for us when we're working with manufacturers or partners on things. It's that connection with the people. The product is obviously important. However, the product is a small component of a bigger thing of everything that fits together, and the people is absolutely critical. So yeah, it's been enjoyable working with you guys so far, and the team echo that as well. So I really appreciate it, Andrew. Thank you for sharing a bit about your history. And I am definitely looking forward to my first visit over to see you guys into Melbourne. Not been there for about 20 years. So Crown Casino, Ramsay Street, it's, you know, the MCG, all of that stuff. Got it all to look forward to.
I think Toadfish is still on Neighbours, Andy. So, you know, we might need to go pay him a visit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I did meet him back then, but I'm not sure he'll remember me. But anyway, no, it's good. Well, look, appreciate it, Andrew. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks again, Andy.
Cheers, mate.